choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello. My name is Stephen Briggs. I am Chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 164. What are you thinking about? Now, a sinking fund is a savings account that has a specific expected purpose. Now, I will tell you that sinking funds tend to be sometimes where it originally came from was a sinking fund was first established, back in 18th century England as a means of basically saving up money to pay off public debt. And that was how they kind of assured creditors that, you know, if you're lending the government money, that you're going to get paid back. But in personal finance, I don't see that nearly as often. In fact, hardly at all, compared to just having it as a general savings fund that is used for larger long-term purchases, things such as a roof, new siding, a replacement vehicle, tuition for school, or maybe even a large vacation. So these are things that you know are going to happen. Like roofs eventually need to be replaced. Siding on a house eventually needs to be replaced. HVAC in a house has a 15 to 20 year lifespan on average. So you kind of have an idea. These things are sort of scheduled, even though when they happen, they can happen suddenly. You at least know that the liability exists. You know, somewhere down the line, kids eventually going to college, or like I said, a large vacation where, you know, I want to go, you know, I would like to spend 2 or 3 weeks in Japan or whatever it might be, or Europe or what have you. When people set up a sinking fund, they tend to deposit a recurring amount each paycheck or each month into the fund. They might throw bonus money or a portion of bonus as well in there. And they get built up over time whilst they're paying for their other monthly expenses and investment priorities. So this is just as much a part of the monthly budget as paying the cable bill, the mortgage or rent, and your food budget, all those other things. You also have a sinking fund budget that typically gets funded as one of those priorities each month. Now, what I'll say to this, though, is that there are certainly some pros and cons, many more pros than cons, but definitely pros and cons to a sinking fund. And so I want to cover those a little bit first, and then we'll talk about kind of how to apply this in a few different ways. So lots of upside to having a sinking fund. One, you can see your priorities clearly through the accounts you have set up. When you sit there what I tend to advise clients is when they're setting up a sinking fund to actually open a separate savings account from any other emergency savings or your personal checking or whatever that is. And I think that's important because one, you can see it, and two, this isn't like 20 years ago where you had to go through a bunch of paperwork and you couldn't tell which account was what and whatever. Now, technology has improved this thing to a point where, one, you can open an online savings account and open multiple ones at the same institution in 5 minutes. Very, very, very easy to do. And you can typically name them. So you can say, that's my emergency fund. This is my trip to Paris. This is my roof. You know, and even have multiple sinking funds for multiple things. You may have several of them. And then you can set up recurring deposits for each so that you know your money is going to these places. And that's another big pro, is that you know you're saving toward those goals because the money is building up each month because you're depositing. And assuming that the sinking fund is in a high yield, let's say a high yield FDIC savings account or a CD that's FDIC insured rolling over, I don't like CDs here as much just because you have to keep maintaining them because they expire and maybe they'll roll or whatever. I think it's a lot more management than worth for a little bit of additional yield, but you can be the judge on that. You know that the money will be there subject to FDIC depositor limits. So, and those, by the way, $250,000 for individuals, $500,000 for couples. So large amounts that typically you're not going to worry about on the sinking fund side as long as that's what's there. But you know that the money will be there. It avoids the problem of, I could grow my money in an investment account, but here's the catch. You don't know when the market will be down 35% and you could be out of a job and you broke your arm and now you need a new roof. And if you were relying on that money to be there when you needed to solve the problem and now it is worth 35% less, that's a problem in and of itself. So, and are there more advanced ways one could possibly try to, I'm gonna save the first so many years, let's say it's a roof, it's 15 years down the line. Could I save in an investment account for a decade or 12 years or something and then move it over? Sure, that's possible. But the thing to kind of keep in mind with that is there is no guarantee that 10 or 12 years down the line, that 10 or 12 years down the line that you're going to be in that the market's going to be up. Like, I'd love to think it is. It seems probabilistic from prior events, but the problem is this: past performance is no indication of future results. But what I do know is when money is in an FDIC insured account, it is insured from loss. Interest rate might fall to nothing. You might get a terrible yield over time. But you know you're not going to be losing balance in that situation. So you got to decide a little bit on that front. But, I think with things as important as like a roof or HVAC, which protect not only the comfort of your home, but literally the value of something that, is so large typically and is worth, money. If you're trying to protect that, I would not. Leverage my insurance or put my insurance fund at risk, because you're now not just risking the balance, you're also risking what it was supposed to insure. That is the systems and things that protect your home. So I think it's just really important to really not get too clever when it comes to what your ultimate goal is with a sinking fund, which is to protect and provide for expenses that can come up. There are a couple of cons when it comes to a sinking fund. As I mentioned earlier, sinking funds tend to be held in savings accounts to protect their value, but it is going to inhibit the ability to potentially grow at a faster rate. But again, the trade-off is you are not risking loss doing so. The other thing is that sinking funds, much like emergency savings and so forth, you got to have enough discipline to not touch the money. And the challenge is, especially when it's not an emergency fund per se, you may feel even more inclined to be like, oh, I wanted to buy a couch or I wanted to buy this other thing. And I know it isn't quite what my sinking fund was for, but it is this pool of money that's saved, so I can pull from that. I'm not risking my emergency fund. And that's, no, you're not risking your emergency savings, but you are risking your ability to save for the thing that, again, was important enough to set up a whole account. And that might be, I think it's probably a little bit easier to trade off vacation for couch, but I think it's a lot harder to trade off roof for that. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't be trading off my ability to buy a new HVAC system. I'd be searching Facebook Marketplace if I'm that desperate, or just save, again, maybe it's saving a little more money. Maybe it's doing a little bit of part-time work for a few months to save up for that. You want that beautiful couch. Maybe you're putting a little more sweat equity for it. There are other means to do that other than I'm going to go and dip into this thing that's meant for a really important thing down the line. So you got to have enough discipline not to touch it. So with all that said, we've talked about pros, we've talked about cons. How much should I be thinking about saving? I'm sorry, the pun was right there. Thinking about saving. How much should I be thinking about saving? So with home repairs and expenses, I tend to advise, and this is very general rule of thumb, and I want to talk through it a little bit. Very general rule of thumb is a typical sinking fund for home repairs and large home replacements, replacement costs, 1% to 2% of the home's value annually is at least a good starting point to begin with. So if you got a home that's worth, let's say, $300,000, then a sinking fund of $3,000 to $6,000 a year is pretty appropriate. And I would probably be on that value. I'd probably be closer. I'd be in the 4.5K to 6 range more so than the 3. Some markets with more inflated home values likely don't have to save as much of a percentage. So if you're in the Seattle area and you have an $800,000 home, I would not be saving $16K a year for home repairs, because a good chunk of what the property values tend to be is inflated based on demand, not inflated because the home is particularly complex or size. So you could probably get away with being on the low end, on the 1% side in that 8K range. But by the same token, a $300,000 home in the Midwest, it gets beaten up with weather. You know, we get all four seasons here. And winters are bitterly cold and summers can be 90 to 100 degrees. Yet once you have that type of range, houses get beat up a little bit more. You're going to probably be on the upper end of that, where you're going to want to save, you know, like I said, maybe 2% of your home value annually, just to keep up with the driveway, the HVAC, the roof, and the, you know, all of that. Might have to put a little more in there. So the other thing to think about is, and another thing too, is that if you have a larger footprint home, well, larger homes will tend to have more things that can break. You're going to, you know, consider a larger value there. Additionally, if you know of impending repairs, so you know that you buy a house and you know that the HVAC is 10 years old, then knowing that that lifespan's typically 15 to 20 years, you may say, you know what, in the next 5 years, I better have enough money saved to replace that thing. So if that's the plan, then you just go, okay, then I'm going to go and make sure that, I break that down so that, okay, if I know a new system for what I need is $20,000, then I know that I'm going to be saving, you know, $4,000 a year, at which point I know I'm going to be saving, you know, a little over $300 a month in order to make that happen. And there you go. And there's your line item and budget, and you keep putting that money in that special savings account, and off and away you are. And assuming that you're able to maintain that over 5 years, you know you're going to have the money you need when that system comes up at the beginning of that lifespan. Now, if it keeps on running another 10 years after that, well, that's sweet. Then maybe you're turning that spigot off and going, you know what, I can either save or invest more money in other ways. You may be given some risk permission to do that. But you also know that if the thing goes on the lower end of its lifespan, you're still okay. So I think it's important to kind of be very calculated about this. And I'm a huge fan also, by the way, of having things automatically withdrawn and deposited, or automatically deposited in these accounts too. So you don't see the money in your checking account. You don't think about, oh, I can spend that. It's just sitting in the background, growing over time. So anytime you can do automated deposits for these things, the better. With vacations, establish a goal for where do you want to go? Do a little bit of legwork. How much are prices for the trip in full? Maybe bake in a little bit of inflation for some of those prices. And then divide it by the number of months until the trip. So I like this because let's say you really want to go to Europe. We've been kicking around a little bit. We'll start kind of getting some numbers with it. And then go, you know, when would we want to go? And set a kind of a date or a goal for that. And say, you know what, we want to go to Mykonos, or we want to go to Mallorca, and we want to go in 18 months. Well, once you get those costs in play, great, then divide that big number by 18, and there's your amount you can save. And if you want to give yourself a little extra buffer, then maybe you're upping the deposits a little bit. But what it does is apart from you having the money needed to go on the trip, I think it makes the vacation feel really exciting and real, and something you can look forward to, because now you have a legitimate plan and you're saving the money to make it happen. It makes it much more likely to happen than, oh, we'd like to go, but it just seems like so much money. And it may be a fair amount of money. There's no doubt about it. If you want to, you know, fly it overseas and spend weeks, it's going to cost you thousands. And you go, well, Stephen, I could shoestring the trip. Then do that too. I mean, if you want to go on the cheap and it's budget airlines and hostels, no shame to that. That's amazing. You go for it. If you're going and saying, I want a more luxury experience, I want to do this and that, that's fine too. But figure out what that path is and that plan, and then save the money to get there. You know, go ahead and walk that back and make those deposits start to happen in that sinking fund. I think it's amazing. I think it's an amazing gift to your future self in that way, too, to get to experience some really neat things. With college tuition, this is another one where parents tend to want to save and save early. With college savings, I think part of this really depends on how much you want to contribute. Like, do you want to try to provide all of a student's undergraduate tuition, for example? Or do you think that should be a shared burden between you and your child? But I think the other thing that parents don't like to talk about, and I think it's really, really important to address, is how much can you realistically afford to contribute while saving for retirement? Now, I'll tell you, there's a person, NBC personality, a guru in the space named Susie Orman. And Susie Orman's been televised. She's been writing articles for decades. And while I don't agree with any of these personalities in full, I really, really, really agree with Susie Orman on this concept. So I want you to take this thing. I want you to have a healthy chew on it. She is a huge proponent of not sacrificing your own ability to retire not sacrificing your own ability to retire ahead of the kids going to college. Because here's the kick. The kids have an entire career and life ahead of them. You don't. You have a certain number of years, a finite number of years left where you're going to work and make the dollars you're making, and then you're not going to anymore. And there's a lot of information to support this. For example, AARP every year does a survey of people when they hit 50 years old, and they ask them, how long do you plan to work till you retire? And over half surveyed say they're going to work until they drop. That's their plan. They then check back in with those folks when they turn 60. And over half of those folks who said, I'm going to work forever, they ain't working forever. They've already had to scale back or modify their work plans because of that, mostly because of the health of a family member or a friend. Maybe that's a spouse. Maybe that's an aging parent, whatever that is. That plan that I'm going to work till I drop didn't happen. So, and I'll tell you, as a planner, it is very challenging for my clients that are in their 60s and they're still working and they're still paying down Parent Plus loans and they cannot retire because they're paying down the 6-9% interest loans because they had this mantle on them, that I gotta provide for my kids' education and school and all that. And I'll tell you, there are lots of ways you can get a quality education and not take out debt. Community college exists. Kids working to pay down school exists. Oh, it took them more than 4 or 5 years. So what? Doesn't matter. Because you know what? You can cram through it in 4 years, then you're 22, 23 years old with six figures of debt. That's a really lousy way to start the workforce, is to be behind that much with these interest rates. And the current interest rate, by the way, for a Parent Plus loan, 9.08%, that rivals the performance of the S&P 500 over the last 30 years. That's you giving the government a 9% coupon. And saying, you know what, we will pay you through the nose for my kid to get to accelerate their process of education. I'll tell you, and then, and meanwhile, sacrificing potentially your ability to retire. And again, if you're 60 and those health things come up, and now you're staring down a Parent Plus loan, your health isn't great, you want to be able to scale back work, but you can't. And those loans, by the way, do not go away. You can't bankruptcy out of them. They'll garnish your wages, they'll garnish your Social Security, they'll go after you. And it sucks. Because I get to hear from people who want to retire, that want to at least be able to work a little less than full time and be able to take care of some health problems. They can't. They financially cannot do it. They cannot afford to quit. It's heartbreaking. But they put them, to a degree, put themselves in the position, said, well, but for my kids. Those kids better be paying right back down to you. And in those cases, where there's a kid to chase down, I tell them, go talk to your kids about how they're going to pay back that loan. Because you need to be able to retire someday. And I'll tell you, if you can't afford to retire when your kids are going to, you know, college, I'll tell you, you cannot afford to be taking on more debt and paying for your kids' college ambitions. There are a lot of employers out there that offer free tuition as part of their employee benefits, frankly, including Briggs Financial, including our own little firm here, pays for our employees to go to college. I got one finishing up a associate's. She's going to be starting her bachelor's. We paid for multiple, you know, we're sitting there working on master's programs, other continuing education. McDonald's pays for this stuff. Starbucks pays for this stuff. There are lots of businesses that pay for kids to go to college and or pay down tuition debt. Put it on them. Have your kids go find a job that's going to provide that. That's great. Online schooling is fantastic. Community colleges are great. You do not need to go and spend $50,000, $60,000 a year, or worse, go into debt for $50,000, $60,000 a year to get a good quality education and to be able to move into whatever career, or to go to trade school for that matter. Goodness knows the trades are booming with respect to the need for them, and frankly, the hourlies are beautiful. Electrical engineers making top dollar, plumbers making top dollar. Got to find a good market to be in, but at the end of the day, there's plenty of ways you can do this thing without taking on a bunch of debt. Now, again, this is where a sinking fund, if you can afford to put that money in and still take care of those other priorities, that's amazing. I think that's a wonderful way to do it. And if it's long enough, this is another one where those, you could easily put it in, if you know you're going to start doing this at age, you know, you're saving for age 18. And you're starting when the kid's 1 or 2 years old, sure, then investing it for 10 or 15 years and then, you know, steadily liquidating as you get closer to the time when kids go to school. That makes a lot of sense. So I'm not saying that this alone should just be all sitting in cash for 2 decades. That is not what I am suggesting here. But I am suggesting that, you know, at the end of the day, a sinking fund can help be a part of the solution in some way, shape, or form. That securing that, maybe that's liquidation of assets, paying taxes, and then, you know, saving that money up, ensuring that it's there, I think can make a lot of sense. But I don't want you sacrificing your ability to retire, because here's the kick, that you only have a finite amount of time that you're going to work before you're not working anymore, and you got to build up. Your kids have got decades. They got decades on you. Sorry, you're getting old. Sorry, I'm getting old. That's life. So please make sure you are not sacrificing your ability to have a high quality of life purely for the notion that you're going to give the money to a bunch of state institutions or worse, be on the juice for the rest of your life. No, thank you. With that all said, we've covered a wide range of topics in terms of pros and cons of sinking funds, how much to save. But the biggest thing I'll tell you, here's the final note from me to you, get started. Open those additional savings accounts. Get an, you know, figure out what you're saving for and how much to save for it. Then go ahead and automate that. Make sure that every month you know that $300 or that $500, that $100 or whatever it is being deposited in those accounts so that you know your priorities are being not just thought of and, oh, they're their concept, but are really being represented with hard dollars going into things that you know are protected so that when you need that money for the things that you know are going to come up, the roof is going to need to be replaced, the siding is going to need to be repaired, the HVAC, the car is going to break down to a point where it makes sense to buy a new one, that you got the resources to go, and I'll pay cash. No debt, please. And be able to pay on that and move forward and have a great life and not be stressed about, you know, having to take out more loans or taking out a home equity line of credit or any of that stuff and paying through the nose interest rates, because you could have prepared instead with just a little forward thinking and a great sinking fund to help you save those monies and make it happen. With that, I want to thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Catch all 164 episodes of Money is Personal on our website at BriggsWealth.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on, I believe, YouTube at this point. I know Player FM, iHeartRadio, Amazon Podcasts. We're all over the place. And, you know, wherever you find us, also check us out on social media. Find our Facebook and Instagram accounts. We got memes, we got dreams, and we got lots of great ideas and goals to share with you. So lots of great financial tips. So with that, be safe, be well, have a wonderful week. We'll catch you with a fresh episode soon. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as a financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.